Good morning, and welcome to the House Judiciary Committee for Tuesday, January 31st. Today we have a presentation from the Legislative Auditor's Office and State Courts Administration regarding the Legislative Audit Report from Minnesota Judicial District, 2nd District. And with the report, we will be hearing from the Auditor's Office and from State Courts Administration. If anyone else in the room would like to testify in this matter, please sign up with our committee page. And at this point, we will proceed with our hearing. I do not believe we have a quorum present as yet. And well, here's Representative Wardlow, and we will have a quorum here. All right, the clerk will take the roll.
Representative Szymanski.
Present.
Representative Mazerall. Representative Johnson.
Yes.
Representative Allen. Representative Anderson.
Here.
Representative Champion. Representative Cornish. Representative Grunhagen.
Here.
Representative Hillstrom. Representative Kreisel. Representative Lane. Representative Lesh.
I'm here.
Representative Liebling.
Yes.
Representative Shoemaker.
Present.
Representative Smith. Representative Swazinski.
Here.
Representative Vogel.
Present.
Representative Wardlow.
Present.
The quorum is present. Representative Johnson, would you like to move for approval of the minutes of the previous meeting?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Johnson moves the minutes of the previous meeting. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are approved. Okay. Our first testifier here this morning is Michael Hassing from the Legislative Auditor's Office. Mr. Hassing, please introduce yourself for the tape and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Michael Hassing. I'm an audit manager with the Legislative Auditor's Office, and part of my responsibility is to plan and conduct audits of the judicial branch offices and district courts. And so that is why we're here today. We did conduct an audit of the 2nd Judicial District late last spring and into the summer, and we provided an audit report that you have before you. The report is OLA Report 11-23. We issued that in October of 2011. I would like to recognize Joan Haskin, who was the auditor in charge of the particular assignment, and she is with us here today as well. This was an internal control and compliance audit of the district's overall financial activity. It was fairly comprehensive in its scope. It covered the fiscal year period from July 1st of 2009 through March 31st of 2011, so we would have a cutoff when we began our field work, so covering activity of fiscal year 10 and fiscal year 11. Again, this was a regularly scheduled audit. We go through a process of determining where we want to provide our audit resources, and we've been working with the courts over a number of years, and it's worked out that approximately about every other year we provide some resources to do some audit work at the courts. We certainly work with the State Court Administrator's Office and the internal auditor at the courts to provide, you know, the best comprehensive coverage. We go in and look at things independently, try to supplement the work that their internal auditor is completing as well. On this particular audit at the 2nd District, we did look at the receipt processing, receipt collections of their fines, fees, and penalties. We looked at administrative expenditures, including their payroll, looked at procurement and accounts payable, contracts, capital assets. We looked at system security and kind of just the general financial management of the district. The district is one of 10 of the district courts, and we've done some audit work at some of the other districts as well. As you all know, the SCAO provides oversight for the districts. They establish the financial policies, fiscal guidance, HR support, and IT support for the districts. District courts have an administrator, and then they have their own financial management teams as well. The court uses the MINSIS, the court information system, to record their financial activity, a module within that MINSIS system. And so we were looking at the information that was in that MINSIS related to their financial activity. They also use, at Ramsey County, they continue to use this VIBES, a Violations Bureau system. So Ramsey and Hennepin counties continue to use that system as they are transitioning to the court's payment center. But again, Ramsey County, the Second District Court, has not made that transition at the time of when we were doing the audit. Again, I mentioned this is an internal control and compliance audit, and so our objectives of that audit were to determine whether the court's internal controls were adequate to ensure that it safeguarded its receipts and other assets, that it accurately paid employees and vendors in accordance with management's authorizations, it complied with legal requirements, and produced reliable financial data. In our report on page 6, we offer the conclusions on this report and the results of our audit work. And our conclusion was that the court, their internal controls were not adequate to ensure that it had safeguarded receipts and other assets, accurately paid employees and vendors, and produced reliable financial data. On the compliance issue, we said that for the items that we tested, the court generally complied with selected financial-related activities. However, there were some areas and some instances where we did identify some non-compliance with related to receipts, payroll, and some other administrative expenditures. And again, I would like to just, I guess, reiterate from our world at the OLA, when we do our internal control and compliance audits, we issue three types of conclusions. We generally have a conclusion where the controls are adequate and in place and compliance is good. The second conclusion is that the entity, their controls were generally adequate, however, they had some exceptions. And the third case is the case that we had here, where the court did not have adequate controls in our professional judgment based on our audit work and the results of our work. So again, I think that is part of the reason, and we had cross-cutting issues, and I'll get into that just a little bit. We did meet at the conclusion of our audit with Mr. Shorba from the SCAO. We met with the CFO, the internal auditors. We met with Ms. Carlson, the Assistant District Court Administrator, and the District Accounting Manager and the staff. As the response to our report on page 21 to 30, the court concurred with all of our audit findings, and we're in the process of developing a plan to address those. Certainly the court was very cooperative throughout the audit process, and the SCAO and the district took these recommendations, findings very seriously, and they were very thorough in their response and in addressing the findings, not only to the district, but using them as a tool to move forward to improve their control processes and control structures over the other district courts as well. And certainly, we believe that all these issues, while there are a number of issues in this report, and some are fairly serious, certainly these are fixable issues that I believe that the district and the court will address and can address. I would like to just point out one other item before I just cover a couple of the key points in the audit. We provided an appendix on page 19 of the report, and this was to provide a perspective of kind of similar cross-cutting findings that the other district courts where we've provided some audit coverage over the past number of years. And so again, I think you can see that there are some similarities. There are some courts that had similar types of findings in a particular control area. And so again, using this as a guide, using it as a tool to enhance whatever training that the court may want to provide across cutting to the other districts, we think can be a valuable tool. I think I'd just like to just talk briefly about
pardon me, Mr. Hassinger. Representative Lesh.
Thank you. Mr. Hassinger. Mr. Hassing, I'm looking at the chart on page 19 you just cited. Can you describe in the boxes in that chart, are those the numbers of instances of deficiencies in each audit, or what are the numbers in the boxes mean?
Mr. Chair and Representative, those are related to the specific finding number of those individual reports. So if you look at 09-34, which was our audit of District 1, the system access finding would have been finding number 10 in that report. In this report that we're talking about now, we had it as finding number 2. So it just refers to the actual finding number in those respective reports.
Okay, so Mr.
Representative Lesh.
Mr. Hassing, I'm having trouble. So as I see it then, leading up to this, this is number 11-23. You can say that, for example, the audit of District 1 had the same number of deficiencies as District 2, or no? Because all the boxes are filled. What I'm trying to figure out is how to compare this adequately with the other audits of the other districts.
Mr. Chair and Representative, we did not include all of the findings from all of the reports. We tried to show those where there were some cross-cutting effects. So this does not include all of the findings for all of those reports on that chart. So under the first line where we talk about the district did not restrict access to business and data systems, we found that same finding in 4 of those reports.
Okay. And Mr. Chair, last question.
Representative Lesh.
So is there a chart, Mr. Hassing, then, that describes, for example, the 3 criteria that you described in the beginning of your comments that you've got meets, and then does not meet? Is it listed as to which of the other judicial districts were ranked in that way? For example, did any of the other districts get a does not meet finding?
Mr. Chair and Representative, we do not have a chart like that, but my recollection is this current report in 11-23 was the first time that we had a report to the courts that we felt that they were not adequate in that third column. Those conclusions are cited in each of those individual reports, and if that is something that you would like a summary on, that is something that we could certainly provide.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Hassing. Please proceed.
Mr. Chair, I would like to just take just a couple minutes just to talk a little bit about the finding one that begins on page 7, and the cross-cutting nature of this finding is that the district did not adequately manage its financial risks or monitor the effectiveness of its internal controls. This is an audit finding that when we do our work in the executive branch, we hold the executive branch agencies to Department of Management and Budget Policy 11-02-01. This is the internal control policy that has been in place in the state of Minnesota for the past number of years. We build this finding based on the elements of the COSO model, the Committee of Sponsoring Organizations, the Treadway Commission, and the 5 elements of risk assessments and internal controls, being looking at the control environment, talking about risk assessments, control activities, information monitoring. Those are the elements that we hold all the agencies to. And again, while the courts and the judicial branch is not explicitly subject to that compliance requirement, we do feel that it is an opportunity to provide a strong structure and a foundation of internal controls just from a business standpoint. It just makes good sense. And again, when we looked at the issues that we had in this particular audit, it seemed like we were having issues in every audit area that we conducted audit work in. And so again, we felt that the district really didn't assess the risks related to their receipts or whether they had processed some unauthorized transactions. They didn't always accurately record financial activity. They allowed incompatible access to computer systems. They weren't reviewing high-risk receipt transactions. They weren't always validating payroll and administrative expense transactions. and the reports, and they didn't have an oversight for the gift card program. A lot of those elements that I just described we include as individual findings, findings 2 through finding 9. But fundamentally, it starts with this basis of assessing the risks of their key financial processes and their key financial controls. And again, we had a lot of discussions with the district and with the court about being aware of the risks. And certainly we concurred and we agreed that the court had done some work. They were aware of the risks, but they were not documented. They had not gone through an exercise of documenting these risks and their associated controls and the impact of not meeting those controls. And that is one of the things that we certainly expect our agencies in the executive branch to do, and that's what the standard that they're required to meet. So again, often the policies, and the SCAO creates policies, in many cases their financial management policies do provide a reference to the State of Minnesota Department of Management and Budget and Department of Administration to those specific statutory requirements of compliance. So again, they had policies in place, but often the district was simply just not following the policy, and the SCAO was not adequately monitoring that effectiveness. So certainly a structure of having these documented risks and assessments provides a foundation and a framework for moving forward when there are changes in policy, changes in personnel, changes in regulations. It gives a roadmap for somebody else to step into that process and have that general understanding to move forward. So certainly the cross-cutting nature of the findings in this report led us to believe that the environment in which they were operating, there was certainly an increased risk that errors could occur and not be prevented or detected by their current procedures and their current controls that were in place. It certainly is an environment that is subject to fraud and abuse and waste. And so again, as I reiterated, we had a number of findings, findings 2 through finding 9, that cover some of the other elements of our internal control. And I don't plan to go through each of those individually, but certainly we'll entertain questions. I think, again, there were red flags throughout the audit that we felt the district was not providing adequate oversight. They weren't monitoring accurately. We feel that they need to just tighten their controls, financial oversight, both at the district and at the SCO, ensure that they're following the policies and procedures that are in place, and better to provide the financial accountability and the fiscal integrity to govern its financial resources. So thank you again for your interest, and I certainly would entertain any questions that any members might have.
Thank you, Mr. Hassing. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hassing, with the report completed and the recommendations and findings and the like, how is this this report, this audit, how is it followed up on later on then to ensure that the recommendations are followed? Is there a process for that as well?
Mr. Sure. Chair and Representative, currently the SCAO, and through their internal audit staff, I believe will take the lead role in following up on the individual findings with the agency, and they will provide our office with an update and the status of that.
Any further questions, Representative Johnson?
One last one. Do you have any, Mr. Hassing? Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you have any specific examples of where somebody was hurt, or constituents or users of the judiciary were harmed by the non-compliance issues you raised?
Mr. Hassing.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative, during the course of our audit, as part of our audit process, I mean, we do testing of individual transactions. We're certainly not testing all of the transactions. Based on the audit work that we conducted, we did not see any evidence of any misuse, so to speak, or any missing funds, but certainly the environment was such that it would have been difficult to assess whether the funds were missing or not.
Thank you. Okay. Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hassing, this audit, as you stated, was intended to address the three areas: safeguarding receipts and assets, payment of employees, and one other area that I don't write fast enough to get. But I'm wondering, did this include any examination of malfeasance such as, well, for example, did it examine any ability of any employees to delete any information out of Vibes or Mensis?
Mr. Hassan.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative, I believe on a couple of occasions we certainly looked at elements of that. Finding number 3 on page 10, for example, is where we cite that the district did not review high-risk receipt transactions. Again, we looked at the main office and the satellite offices for when they are bringing in and collecting receipts. By high-risk receipt transactions, one of the things that we look at is who has the ability to make waivers against those fines and fees, who can reduce those fines and fees, who can dismiss fines, fees, and penalties out of that system or to individual people where they would not have to pay what may have been cited on that, who was making error corrections to those fines and fees. And without an adequate review of the district and seeing who has the ability to do that and who was doing that and under what authority were they doing those types of transactions, it would have been difficult. And again, as I said, we didn't see any evidence of that based on our tests. But again, the environment was such that they were not monitoring that as well. One of the other areas related to your specific question, again, is just access to the business systems themselves. I mean, they had individuals that had left the district, were no longer working for the district, that maintained access to the system, which was a risk. They had some people that had what we classify as unnecessary access based on their business responsibilities, where they didn't have or they had too much access to the system. We always look for individuals that have the ability to control and manage an entire process or an entire cycle based on either their job responsibilities or their access to the system. So we certainly take a look at that as part of our audit process.
Representative Lesh.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Mr. Hassan, you said this was a scheduled audit, so they knew you were coming. Is that right?
Mr. Hassan.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative, that is right. We provide a notification of them ahead of time before we begin the audit.
Okay, so and not Lesh. Mr. Chair suggesting that anything was changed there, but however, based on the procedures of how you did the audit, say, for example, for the case of argument that there was something bad going on, did you examine the consequences of a breaking of state court administration policy in doing any of those bad things? For example, fixing my speeding ticket by deleting it out of the system. Did you examine the consequences to individuals, employees for that as part of your audit?
Mr. Hassan.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative, I would say not specifically looking at the consequences of that. Again, we look for those deficiencies in internal control. We're looking for examples of non-compliance with policy, so to speak. And if somebody is not reviewing a payroll report, for example, of who's getting paid and how much they're getting paid, who's authorizing that payment, we would cite that as a deficiency. But we didn't look for the consequences of that person, so to speak, if I understand your question.
Okay. One last question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lesh, and I would just remind the committee members that we would like to also have the courts administration come up and testify, and they may be able to answer some of these questions as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Representative Lesh.
Thank you. Mr. Hassing, I'm assuming that the checklist for your audit was based on best practices and examination practices of other judicial districts and with other state or legislative auditors around the country. But I'm assuming that there were also some reasons for specific compliance measures to be put in place, and henceforth, your auditing controls on those. For example, my uncle lived in Chicago for a long time and used to brag about how he could get a speeding ticket fixed, and he knew people who had plum jobs, no-shows, what you call them, and And I'm wondering, while Minnesota definitely has a different tradition than Chicago in that way, I'm wondering, were there any historical instances in Minnesota that showed up in the press of things going bad in the courts that were the reasons for some of the compliance measures in place now, or the checklist of items that you looked at as an auditor? Does that make sense, or do I need to rephrase?
Mr. Hassan.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we follow a fairly standard audit approach. We have standard audit steps that we take within each of these areas. We treat each of these areas as an individual audit area, assign an individual auditor to those. We have compliance issues as part of that. We have standard practices as part of that. But certainly we get an understanding of our entity and the nuances and the specifics of, again, a court in the judicial branch, for example. I mean, again, with the individual policies and procedures that are at the district level, at the SCAO, that are might be somewhat different or vary a little bit from our standard practice, and so we look at those. But generally, I would certainly state that we treated the district fairly in our audit approach. We didn't do anything special or unique in regard to how we conducted our audit based on other findings or elements at other entities or at other courts. It was a fairly standard practice and fairly standard approach to the audit, again, but we just found a number of deficiencies.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. All right. Representative Lane.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Hassing, I see that you say that you audit on a rotating schedule and that this one covers, I see, almost 2-year period of time. Do you do all these things on a rotating basis specifically, or is it kind of natural, or do you just sort of flow a little bit more loosely?
Mr. Hassing.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we do not have a standard audit cycle or a standard rotating audit cycle. Again, we've got a couple main things that we do as the legislative auditor. We're responsible for auditing the financial statements of the state of Minnesota. It takes a big part of our time. We do audits of the federal expenditures of the state of Minnesota, our single audit, and then we have a period of time that we devote to internal control and compliance audits that we have to provide our limited resources to across state government, to a number of different entities. So we don't have a standard cycle, but we do try to evaluate the risk and where can we provide audit coverage. Certainly, if there are things that have been brought to our attention from the public or from legislators, we try to include those in our assessment of where we need to provide coverage. Specifically at the courts, I work with the SCAO, with their internal auditor, to see what kind of coverage they have done over the last period of time, and we kind of reach a consensus on where we want to go to get the best coverage so we're not duplicating that effort.
Representative Lane.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Hassing, so when was the previous audit of this section, and what did that show?
Mr. Hassing.
Mr. Representative, or Mr. Chairman and Representative, we have not audited at the second district for, I couldn't even tell you if we had been down there specifically as an individual audit of that, but it would have been way more than 10 years if we had. And again, one of the reasons we went there is that the internal auditor from the SCAO had not been down there to do individual audit work as well.
Thank you.
All right. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll try to be brief. Mr. Hassing, thank you. First of all, this is quite eye-opening, and I think we all are taking this very, very seriously. These are very serious issues. I wouldn't expect you to do it in the report, but I'm wondering if, as part of your audit, you identify who would be responsible for making sure that these things happened. I mean, this is kind of mistakes were made, whereas I think what we need to know and probably what the courts need to know is, you know, maybe they do it and you don't, but I'm just wondering whose job is it to say somebody dropped the ball, who was that somebody? Because this is clearly stuff that was somebody's job to watch and take care of.
Mr. Hassan.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we identify the situations that we find. We provide the facts of the deficiencies in the controls. We do not provide the names of those individuals. The court, in their response, they provide who's responsible for ensuring that it gets corrected.
Representative Liebling.
So, thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Hassing. So we, they identify who's going to fix it, but nobody identifies, at least publicly, who dropped the ball, and that's okay if that's the case. But so you don't identify that person even privately, and that's up to the agency to do, I take it.
Mr. Hassing.
Mr. Chair and Representative, that would be a question for the court.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Allen.
Mr. Chairman Hassing.
Representative Allen, please pull your microphone.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Hassing, my question is, you state that you looked at whether the district complied with selected financial finance-related legal requirements. It's not clear to me which findings in here were. Did you find specific instances where there were violations of legal requirements?
Mr. Hassing.
Mr. Chair, Representative, for an example of that, one would be finding where they were not, finding number four on page 10, where the district was not promptly depositing some receipts. They were holding on to some receipts that they had received for up to 3 months before they were being deposited. So that would be one example of a legal requirement where they're required to deposit financial resources within 24 hours. And they did not do that. I mean, they were holding on to some receipts for a long period of time.
Yeah. Follow-up question, Representative Allen.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Hassing, is that that's the only that you recall or that you're able to locate in these findings that was a violation of a specific legal requirement?
Mr. Hassing.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative, that is one example that I can just come with off the top of my head without getting into the details of the report.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Hassing. We will now ask the State Courts Administration, Ms. Susan Dosal, and Ms. Dawn Torgerson. Am I correct there?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Morning.
And members
morning,
of the
Ms.
committee.
DeSalle, would you?
For the record, my name is Sue Dosal. I'm the State Court Administrator. And with me this morning is Dawn Torgerson, who is our Chief Financial Officer, and Diane Carlson, who is the Deputy Judicial District Administrator for the 2nd Judicial District. We're here this morning to give you a progress report on the efforts that we have made to address the Legislative Auditor's Report. Let me start out by saying that we welcome and we appreciate the work of the Legislative Auditor. The judicial branch is committed to continuously improving our operations to do everything we can to most effectively and efficiently serve the public. So in that spirit, we have taken this report and its findings seriously. And as you can see in the presentation, that corrective action has been taken on all nine of these findings. I do want to reiterate that no loss of public funds occurred, and we take comfort from that. But the findings have clearly shown that there are weaknesses that we must address, and we have done so. So I want to turn this over now to Dawn Torgerson, our Chief Financial Officer, and she's going to walk through the findings and the steps that we have taken to address each of those. And Diane Carlson from the 2nd District is here to answer questions that you might have of her.
All right. Good morning, Ms. Torgerson. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
My name is Dawn Torgerson, and I'm the Finance Director for the Minnesota Judicial Branch. And as Sue indicated, I'm going to walk you through. We have a brief PowerPoint presentation that outlines the nine findings, starting with finding one through finding nine. What we'll be reviewing and providing is information on the status of each of those findings, and then on the slides we'll identify the actions taken either by State Court Administration, the 2nd Judicial District, or both. So the first finding, and Mike Hassing referred to this in his presentation, had to do with this lack of a risk assessment. And the branch has made significant strides, I think, toward complying with this audit finding. When the audit came out in the end of October, We've already promulgated a judicial branch policy on financial internal control structures. That policy then directed the creation of a state court unified procedure that provides the direction staff will need in order to carry out the risk assessment process. And then we've developed templates. They're in a draft form right now, but these templates really are the way we exercise or undertake the risk assessment process. We've drafted templates for each of the financial areas under which we think we have risks. Those risks have been identified, and we've identified how we take action to address those risks going forward. Those templates will be available for our divisions at SCAO to utilize, as well as for the judicial districts. They will take those, and they will make sure that they review the work themselves, make sure that they are unique or meet the needs of some of the unique actions that may be occurring at the district level that wouldn't necessarily be the same as some of the risks we see at the larger statewide level. This is a relatively new concept for the branch. I mean, the executive branch has been doing this work for a couple years, but the judicial branch has not. So we do recognize that there's going to have to be a significant learning curve here for staff to undertake this process. So we will be doing training very soon. The templates are in draft form, so we think the training component can start in the next month or so. And we do recognize that this is something that can't be done once and put on the shelf. The procedure was drafted to direct staff that this is something they're going to have to review annually. Risks change, needs change, policies, statutes change. We have to make sure that we can be responsive to those. So we will be taking action on an annual basis to make sure we're reviewing the risks that the branch has. The second finding has to do with limiting system access, and again, Mr. Hassing provided quite a bit of information on this finding. Essentially, we were finding that the second district was not limiting access adequately in the state accounting system or in the case management systems. They have made some progress. However, this is an item that is still in progress from the branch perspective. They have been able to demonstrate to internal audit that they are doing this review and taking steps to mitigate incompatible access in the state accounting system, but they are still doing some work as it pertains to the case management systems themselves. We do recognize, as was outlined in Appendix A, that this is an area where the state court administration needs to step forward and take more of a lead on providing direction to our districts in terms of how they deal with issues of incompatible access. So we do have some procedures in place, but we don't think they're really adequate. So we're going to have to go back and revisit those procedures, amend them, maybe add some new ones, directing staff in terms of how they're supposed to undertake this work. We do, though, recognize that something has to be done in the meantime to make sure that we mitigate any risk we may have because we do have incompatible access. And one of the tools we do have is to do this high-risk receipt review, which Mr. Hassing referred to and actually is identified in finding number 3. But we do recognize that once staff are doing that, that is one control we have to make sure that when there is incompatible access, at least we are doing a monthly review of those transactions to make sure that the proper documentation is in hand and that we aren't seeing adjustments to cases in terms of fines and fees owed that aren't authorized through court order or other recognized means.
Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Torgerson, we just heard from Mr. Hassing this is a pretty comprehensive audit, but even in light of that comprehensiveness, his team was not able to examine every transaction. Are you saying that you propose that every time there is a change, a modification in one of those records, that someone goes in and looks at each one and ensures that it's backed up by the court record?
Ms. Bergerson.
Chair, Representative. No, we do not. The procedure does not require staff to look at every item. However, they are supposed to look at a sample on a monthly basis based on volume. The maximum they would have to look at, I think, is at least 50 per month. And so they would, you know, over time, we hope, become familiarized with where they have the greatest risk and would focus their efforts on those types of transactions. But especially in the case of the second district, I don't think they would have the staff resource to be able to look at every single transaction. But at least they have the tool, they have a report they can run, and they can review those transactions regularly.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Please proceed, Ms. Ferguson.
Just on the limiting system access piece, we will, once we've gotten these procedures revised, we're planning to do some training by the end of the fiscal year on this particular item. For finding number 3, this, again, is the high-risk receipt transactions finding. And we do have a procedure. The procedure was put into place in February of 2011, so it is somewhat new. And in fact, it was in response to findings in the first district audit regarding reviews of high receipt transactions. I will say that the second district audit took place late spring, early summer, so the procedure was still relatively new. However, they were making some progress. What was happening is on the Mensa side, they were doing the review. They just weren't documenting that review. They have since started doing that. So in terms of this finding, that matter is resolved. And in Vibes, they didn't have a report that would allow them to do the review. They have since developed such a report, so they are doing a similar review in Vibes with the adequate documentation every month. So we consider this finding to be resolved at this point. Finding number four has to do with the prompt deposit of receipts, and this goes back to the discussion about statutory requirement as well as a state court administrator procedure requirement that when there are receipts in excess of $1,000, they're supposed to be deposited daily. This item is still in progress. Right now, the second district is looking at ways it can improve its business process so that it can try to get more of these receipts deposited daily. However, they do have a very high volume of receipts that come in, and there are times that they simply cannot get them deposited because, in some instances, they're tickets, and they haven't received the ticket from law enforcement, hasn't been entered into the case management system, defendants remitted payment ahead of time, and there's no way to enter that payment into the system. So what they've done so far is they've come up with a procedure under which they will document how to safeguard receipts that they have to keep overnight. I do believe they're keeping them in a safe overnight, so they are in a secure location. And then we will continue to look at whether or not it's actually feasible for the branch to meet the statutory requirement. MMB Statute 16A.275 does permit agencies to request a waiver to the daily deposit requirement. And so the State Court Administrator's Office is in the process of gathering information from the Second District along with our other judicial districts to determine really what would be a reasonable period of time in which we can get this work done. Because clearly we want to be in compliance, but if we find we cannot because of the way our business works, then what is the best solution? So staff are currently gathering that information and we'll be putting a request together and submitting that to the Commissioner of MMB in the next month or so. We hope that they will approve our waiver and that we'll then be able to comply with that requirement. Oops. Yeah. Finding number five has to do with access to checking account. Each of our courts have a local checking account, and in the situation here in the district, we had one staff person who could not only write the checks, but they could reconcile the checking account every month. So it was really just a matter of splitting up those responsibilities between two staff, and the district has done that, and so now we consider this finding to be resolved. Finding number six, this had to do with review of key payroll reports. Here we found, you know, the state court administrator has a payroll procedure. In that procedure, you know, staff are supposed to complete their time, supervisors approve that. When there's exceptions, you have documentation. And then we also identify various payroll-related reports that payroll staff and accounting staff are supposed to review either biweekly after payroll has processed, monthly or annually to ensure that the payroll's been processed accurately and that we've got the proper access to our payroll records. The second district was doing some of this work. They were looking at the reports. The problem was that they weren't documenting that review, so there was no evidence to OLA that this work was happening. Since the audit release, though, they have improved practice. They are reviewing exceptions. They are reviewing the reports as outlined in our procedure, and they're documenting that review. So we do consider this finding to be resolved. However, there are several procedures that will follow here in the remainder of these findings, payroll, procurement, fixed assets, where we think the State Court Administrator's Office definitely needs to take a greater role in revisiting the procedure, making sure that court staff throughout the state are trained on the procedure. And then what we've done, too, is we've developed a checklist where we've taken the procedure and tried to consolidate it into a single checklist that staff can use. It's much more clear in terms of who has to do a particular task, when they have to do it, what they have to do to demonstrate compliance. So we're going to take the procedure along with the checklist and use that to provide some training later this spring on the payroll component. Finding number seven has to do with administrative expenditures. Again, state court administration has a procedure on the procurement process that basically instructs staff on the steps and the authorizations, documentations they need to have in order to ensure that they are undertaking procurement in the proper manner. The second district had instances where they just were not complying, as noted in the OLA audit. Since the audit, they have improved their practices and they are now are in compliance with our uniform procurement procedure statewide. But again, as I mentioned, this is an area where we think state court administration needs to take additional steps. We've also generated a checklist that complements the procedure, and later this spring we will be doing additional training for court staff. Finding number 8 has to do with gift cards that are provided in our specialty court programs as incentive tools to participants in those courts. The second district, the issue here was that the second district was providing the gift card incentives but was not adequately tracking those gift cards. We consider gift cards to be very similar to cash. I mean, you can reuse them in a store and you can buy things with them. So they need to be protected, safeguarded, those sorts of things. So what had OLA found is that are recommended is that they needed to have some kind of inventory or log of the gift cards, that they needed to keep track of who purchased them, who was keeping track of them, who they were distributed to, and for what purpose, what the increments of the gift cards were, where they were purchased, those sorts of things. This finding is still in progress. What we did is the second district has developed an inventory list, so at least they do know what they have on hand, how they're being distributed, and for what purpose. But the other piece of the finding that OLA mentioned is that overall there was a procedure that just didn't exist. I mean, we had nothing in place saying this is how you should handle gift cards, this is how you should provide them, those sorts of things. So state court administration has drafted a procedure on gift cards. It's under the review right now of our internal policy groups, and our goal is to try to have this procedure wrapped up by the end of February, mid-March. At that time, we will provide some training to staff on the procedure so they are familiar with what their responsibilities will be, but we do think this item is very close to being resolved. And then finally, finding number 9, this has to do with fixed assets or our capital assets. Again, state court administrator has a procedure that requires districts to maintain an asset inventory. And with that inventory, you're supposed to maintain whether you add items to the asset list, you take items away, and then you're supposed to use that asset list to do a physical inventory review every 2 years. The second district was doing some of these things, but not enough of these things, and so this item is still in progress. Right now, the second district is in the process of developing inventory lists so that they do know which items they have on hand. And then once they have those lists developed, then they'll have the ability to go out and do the physical asset inventory review that they're supposed to do under our procedure. Again, this item, as was the case with payroll and procurement, really is in need of some retraining for court staff. Some of these policies have been in place for some time, and we just have not done any sort of refresher training on them. So we intend to do that in late spring and also had developed a checklist to kind of streamline, give staff easier resource to figure out what it is they have to do. So just to recap, since October 20th, when the audit was released, we have taken action on all 9 of the findings. 4 of the 9 findings have actually been resolved at this point, with several of them, I think, in a very good position to be resolved very soon. We've taken the findings very seriously, and we've made a very conscious decision to share this information to the branch as a whole. Presenting the information to our judicial counsel, we actually have to provide an update to them this month because they're very interested, as are you, to know how we're progressing in our efforts. We've shared the information with our district administrators, the directors at SCAO, our accounting officers in all of the districts that make up the lion's share of our financial staff or direct the financial staff work. And our HR managers in particular related to the payroll findings. As I've indicated, we have developed tools to monitor and document compliance. We've implemented or promulgated the policy and procedure on the risk assessment process. We've got those templates developed that folks can use to actually carry out that work. We're working on a gift card procedure that should be available very soon so we can have some direction on that piece. And then in terms of our actual existing procedures, we've tried to supplement them with these checklists in the area of payroll, procurement, and fixed assets, so folks have something that's easier for them to use and to navigate. Training, we've started some training. The payroll component, we've had a little training on that piece, but clearly we've got some training ahead of us yet this spring, as I indicated in the presentation. And, you know, just to wrap up, we did recently do a statewide WebEx to our court employees where we did provide this very information to them as well, highlighting the findings, why it's important they understand, it's important that we find ways to comply with them, and where we are in that process. So with that, that completes my presentation, and I can certainly take questions at this time.
I agree. Thank you, Ms. Torgerson. If I may start the questioning, since implementing some of these recommendations and going forward with your other works in progress, do you have a feeling for the system? Is it improving efficiency in the system, or is it kind of slowing the process down a little bit to the point where, you know, the regular court work isn't getting done?
I don't know that I can speak specifically to how it's affecting the local courts. I do know that, you know, when you make a more conscious decision to be addressing issues of incompatible access or, you know, putting controls in place, that sometimes that can take a little more effort to do that. However, I think we recognize that there's value in that. I think staff would rather spend time on this work than find that they didn't and then something happens, that there's a theft or a fraud that occurs. So I think we're trying to approach it in a way that, you know, recognizes we may not be able to cover everything, kind of back to this notion with the high-risk transactions, for example. We can't look at all of them. We look at a sample. So we're trying to figure out what that optimum point is, but I think it's necessary work.
Thank you. Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering, both Ms. Torgerson, Ms. DeSalle, and maybe Ms. Carlson, if you can say why, well, I guess for primarily Ms. Torgerson and Ms. DeSalle, why is it that the second judicial district is the first one to have this finding that is really bad compared to the other judicial districts?
Ms. Torgerson?
Mr. Chair, Representative, you know, I'm not sure. I think that's more of a question for OLA. I mean, they're the ones who are conducting the audit, and based on their review, it was just in their opinion that the second district had a little more work to do, I guess, in these areas than our other districts.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Representative Lesh.
I agree with Ms. Torgerson. With all due respect, I think that's a question for court administration. You heard his testimony also, and you heard him say all these areas that the second judicial district was not meeting, and assuming that, well, not assuming, but according to their audits, the other judicial districts that they audited were meeting them. So if you're saying it's just bad luck, maybe those other judicial districts had the same deficiencies, but they weren't caught by the OLA or something. Clearly, their findings showed that the second judicial district to be different, and I guess I'm just wondering. The reason I ask, Mr. Chair, is I was gone for about half the year last year. I was out of state and unable to really monitor the news, so I don't know if there was a news story that came out about this, that they glommed onto something, whether it was the distribution of gift cards for, I'm assuming that was special courts or something. Maybe, Mr. Chair, maybe one of the testifiers can answer that. Was there a news story that broke when this came out in October?
Ms. DeSalle?
Mr. Chair and Representative Lesh, there was in October a story about this audit, that's correct, but there, I think in response to an earlier question you had, as far as we know, there wasn't anything that, any news story in some other district that prompted OLA to take a look here or consider this more seriously. I think, as they have explained it to us, it is that some of these findings were noted in other districts, and there were just more of them, I think, in the second district, and they felt that they needed to make sure that we were aware of that this was a serious concern, and we have treated it as such.
Okay. Representative Lesh, would you mind hearing from the legislative auditors staff as well on that particular question?
Well, I guess I think in my mind we heard the answer, Mr. Chair, that there were these lists of things you had to do and things that you weren't doing, And the second judicial district got the list of the most things that they weren't doing. Unless I misunderstood that, I don't think we need to hear from them again. But obviously, you're the chair, if you'd like to, go ahead.
Mr. Hassinger, would you like to respond to this question? Good morning. Please re-identify yourself, Mr. Hassinger.
Yes, Michael Hassing from the Legislative Auditor's Office. Mr. Chair, Representative, once again, I think your assessment is kind of parallel to ours. I mean, when we do an assessment, when we're out conducting an audit, we don't go in with any preconceived notion or preconceived ideas, and certainly, again, there was no news report or article that precipitated our audit here. Again, this was a planned, scheduled audit. It just kind of came around that it was time to go do some audit work at the Second Judicial District. And again, back to our conclusion, again, in our professional opinion, based on the number of findings, the cross-cutting nature, the responses we were getting from our inquisitions as we were conducting the audit work, again, they had some serious deficiencies across the board in a number of areas, and again, we really felt that that warranted that they just did not have the controls in place and felt that their controls that were there would not necessarily prevent or detect financial improprieties if they were existing. And so again, that prompted us to reach that conclusion that we did.
Please identify yourself and proceed.
I'm Cecile Ferkel. I'm the Deputy Legislative Auditor, and I'd like to just add a few comments to what Mike said. If we look at finding one again, which talks about the need for risk assessment and the elements of internal control, one of the things that both the courts and the district, I'm sure, is focusing on is what are the risks in our environment and what controls do we have in place to make sure that they're addressing those risks. But one of the other elements of internal control is also monitoring, and how does management know that those controls are operating effectively, that they're being performed timely as they're supposed to be? And I think this is one of the things we found in some cases, that the courts had well-developed policies that did direct these districts, District 1 and other districts, to follow certain procedures that were intended to have effective internal controls at the district level to ensure that good financial management was done. And what we found in District 1 was that oftentimes those procedures were not being followed. We did District 2. We also did identify with the gift card area that there wasn't a procedure, that perhaps the risks of gift cards in a financial management environment hadn't been fully assessed. And I think in that case, you know, where we say, well, gift cards are like cash, they're actually better than cash because you can use them and you can still have the physical card sitting there. I don't know if, like you, I run across gift cards all over my house that my kids get. I don't know if there's money on them or not a money on them. You find a $5 bill, you know that's worth something, so you know to protect it. So gift cards actually pose some even more risk than cash does. So I think focusing back on finding one and saying, you know, who in District 1 or in the courts said, what are the risks in our environment? What are our controls? Do we have procedures to address those controls? And how do we know that those procedures are being followed? And I think that is a question for both management at the Second Judicial District and for management at the State Court Administrator's Office. And I think that was kind of the point of us putting together that appendix to say, hey, we've told you about risks that can occur related to incompatible access, related to poor system security. We've had these findings in other districts, and again, now we're finding them in District 1. We think these are things that the State Court Administrator's Office should focus on, and I think that in their presentation, it does seem that they're taking a more comprehensive approach, not just to make sure that the second district addresses these issues, but that they do address them across the districts, the other districts as well.
If I could, Mr. Chair, I'd like to hear from court administration again.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Ms. Ferkel. Mr. Hassing.
Mr. Chair, I'm wondering also, you know, I think these findings are more akin to what in the criminal law we'd call an inchoate offense, where something could have happened, and there's no suggestion that anything happened here, but it's the whole, well, you know, something could happen if you don't have these safeguards in place. And of course, that presumes what kind of management there is. Maybe obviously, without controls in place, it gives management a lot more flexibility to run an office the way they want, and sometimes they can do it very effectively. But, of course, we have them in place because we don't know who's going to be in charge. If the next person comes along isn't so good, well, then things could all unravel. So I'm wondering, who was in charge, whose responsibility was it to ensure that these controls were in place? And according to the Office of the Legislative Auditor, at least, it didn't happen. And in your opinion, was it being run effectively at the time, and why were the controls not in place at the time? Those three questions, Mr. Chair, if I could, whoever wants to answer.
All right, Ms. Carlson, please identify yourself.
Yes, Diane Carlson, Assistant District Administrator. Like Don said, I think you know, as far as who's responsible, you know, that's something for the courts or OLA to discuss, but I think it was some factors from different levels of the organization. I think there was, you know, as other organizations have had budget cuts, we have cuts in staffing in our administration, accounting, HR, and some of the procedures that were supposed to be in place, those are some of the things that maybe took a back seat at times. And the responsibility of monitoring that those procedures were taking place would be a responsibility of the administration. That was not being done. We did not have a risk assessment. Now we have the checklist. We have ability to have a chart or a resource to take a look at that every year and make sure that our staff and managers are following those procedures.
Representative Lesh, you have a follow-up question?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Ms. Carlson, as I stated, I was gone for quite a while last year, so I didn't read the article, and I wasn't in town when all this was being discussed, and I work at the courthouse, but have not been there much the last couple years. So you're the deputy court administrator. Who's the court administrator now, or who was at the time?
Right, Ms. Carlson.
Chair, Representative. Larry Deese is the district administrator. During the audit portion, the district administrator was on leave, and I was acting administrator. But this area of administration, accounting, HR, is under my responsibility as the deputy administrator.
Okay.
Representative Lesh.
So in light of that, thank you, Mr. Chair, Ms. Carlson. I think I heard your answer to the first question, mm-hmm. which is what I was wondering, because you were overseeing it. I'm wondering, the next question I had, when I asked the question about whether there were previous news stories, it's mostly because we in the legislature, we have someone like the Office of the Legislative Auditor investigate things. Oftentimes, it doesn't self-generate. Oftentimes, it's in response to something that happened, and sometimes not recently, sometimes 10 years ago, sometimes 20 years ago, where there was something in some judicial district where a judge was giving away freebies or something like that. I don't know, which is why I asked the question, not because of something that spurred that anything happened in the second judicial district. But let me see if I have my next question. I think, are there any actions that are planned with respect to restructuring other than just what was stated in the findings in your PowerPoint? And I think that's a question probably for Ms. DeSalle.
Ms. DeSalle.
Mr. Chair and Representative Lesh, we are not undertaking any restructuring of any kind. But we certainly, as we've indicated, have taken seriously all of these findings and have taken steps in our policies and our procedures and our training to make sure that we've tightened up and that we are going to be promulgating this comprehensive risk assessment process, which we haven't done before. Just a little context for you. As you know, the assumption of state funding of the trial courts wasn't completed until 2005. So before that time, these were all county funded the state auditor would have provided audits for these. So we are bringing in, we are creating a new system. We have had some growing pains, obviously, as we have done that, and developing from 87 different procedures to a much more uniform and consistent process. So some of what you've seen here, I think, is a product of that growing maturation of the judicial branch as a state-funded, unified branch. And so we take seriously these findings. We appreciate very much every time the legislative auditor takes a look at our operations. We need that help. We don't have enough staff. We'd like to have a much bigger internal audit staff because, we do have a lot of money that runs through the court system, and we take it very seriously. Our fidelity to you and to the taxpayers, and to assure that we have strong financial controls. So we welcome the legislative auditor's work. We have our own very small two-person internal audit function where we try to do as much as we can to assure that our operations are in compliance with the best practices of strong financial controls. But, clearly we don't have enough. But we're doing our very best, and I think that this shows you how seriously we take this. We have jumped on each one of these findings and are taking strong action to assure that we are coming into compliance as quickly as possible.
Thank you. Representative Lesh, you have one more question.
Mr. Chair, actually, by way of closing comment, I wanted to say, Ms. DeSalle, I'm impressed that throughout all this testimony, not once during this entire hearing was it brought up of the slashing and burning of the judicial budget over the course of recent cycles. So I understand that you do what you can with what you're given, and as a person who works closely with the court system, I see the effects of that every day. So obviously this is of concern to us. We want this to happen. I think it does distinguish the Second Judicial District from others, so something different needs to be done, absolutely, so that this doesn't come up in this hearing again. However, in that context, we know you're working with what you've been given. That's it, Mr. Chair.
All right. And thank you, Representative Lesh. We have a question from Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, as I listen to this, I think about the fact that lawyers in the state have to handle their trust funds in a very particular way, or they're subject to discipline. And with good reason. So even lawyers who are not accountants, not managers, maybe in a one-person shop, a three-person firm, whatever, are held to a pretty high standard for good reason. And I appreciate that this is tough. That this is a lot bigger than one lawyer's office. But it also has to be held to a very high standard, as I know you all recognize. And I am just. I recognize this is complicated, and it's good that there are going to be some statewide standards, because this is a lot for one manager to handle and their needs and the transition that Mr. Sal talked about. Okay, I get that. But, Ms. Carlson, I have to, you did reference that it was budget. I don't know if Representative Lesh maybe missed that, but I just want to clarify here, I think these are mistakes that are, some of them are worse than others, obviously, but I just want to clarify, Ms. Carlson, even though I feel I'm perhaps being a little rude in doing this, but are you taking responsibility personally for these oversights? Because somebody needs to. These are things that should not have happened. I mean, some of this, forgive me, are just no-brainers, even for somebody like me who's not an accountant. I mean, the gift card thing, the people having, the same person being able to do multiple things in the accounts, that kind of stuff, that just shouldn't have happened. And budget cuts or no budget cuts, this has to be, for management, this has got to be a top issue, with or without any auditor. So could you address that? Are you taking responsibility?
Ms. Chairman, Representative, definitely. We took it very seriously. The judges on our bench took it very seriously. We've already done training internally for all of our supervisors and managers, employees in the district. We've met with each division and gone over what responsibilities they have under each finding and who exactly should be responsible for doing that, what is the procedure. State court has worked with us to do that, to hold people accountable. And like I said, we have a checklist that I expect in years, this next year, to take a look at every year and monitor that those are indeed happening and that the procedures are being followed.
All right. I have just a couple of questions, and I think we may be drawing to a conclusion on your testimony here. But on finding number three, the high-risk transactions, what do you classify as a high-risk transaction? Ms. Torgerson.
You know, I do believe that will vary by court. But generally, I think you'd want to look at a transaction. It could be that it's a high dollar amount. You'd want to look at whether there's, you know, the way that you can do this is you can run the report and you can kind of sort the information to see what sort of adjustments have occurred. And the goal is to try to see whether it's against a large case. There's consistent reductions, say, on a specific case type, or you're able to see that one employee is doing more of this work than others. It's really going to vary. But the goal is to try to be looking at it with enough regularity that you would see something that's an abnormality. But you'd probably start with something that's a larger volume item, see why it was adjusted, make sure that all the proper documentation's in place, and then try looking at other areas where you might have concerns.
Okay. I have one more question for you. On the gift cards, are the gift cards used throughout districts across the state, or are they just particular to the metropolitan area?
No, it is my understanding that some of the specialty courts in the non-metro districts and counties are also providing gift card incentives in those programs.
All right. Thank you. Hearing no further questions from the State Courts Administration, thank you for your testimony. And we do have Representative Mazrall with a question for the Office of the Legislative Auditor. Representative Mazrall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Mr. Hassing, I think you had indicated it had been 10 years or more since the last audit of the Second Judicial District. As a result of this conclusion of inadequacy, do you expedite the next audit, or what kind of follow-up is there from your office?
Mr. Hassan.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative, I stated 10 years, and to be honest with you, I don't know exactly. I'd have to go back, you know, to our archive records probably to see when the last time we had done some specific audit work at District 2, although I do know that probably 6 or 7 years ago we did some audit work at the SCAO that was more cross-cutting across all districts, and so that would have included some work there as well, but that was directed at the SCAO rather than the individual districts. But as far as expediting when we would go back, again, we don't have a formal process to go back to follow up specifically on these. We will again rely on the courts and their internal auditor to provide us with a status update of those if we're seeing satisfactory progress on that. That would be part of our determination of when we go back. Our plan would be not during this interim, but a year from now. Again, that would be on that every other year cycle, and that would be on that every other year cycle that I talked about previously. We would probably plan to do some additional work at the courts in some respect. Whether that would be, again, at another judicial district would be probably the high priority, but there may be some other demands that come up, or we'll have to wait and see, but we would probably do some work at the courts for sure, probably next year.
Ms. Brickle.
Mr. Chair and member, every year when we decide how we're going to deploy our resources, we do look at all the entities under our jurisdiction, and we do our own assessment of where the risks may be in state government. And having had an audit at the Second Judicial District that did not have favorable conclusions would elevate that risk the next time that we do decide what to do at the court system. So even if we said, well, we have to allow enough time to pass for them to put in place the changes that they're planning to put in place. So it would be inappropriate to go in again right now to say, well, what have you done to improve? But at the point that we thought that perhaps enough time had passed, maybe a couple of years, and we were comparing, deciding which aspect of the judicial branch to do a review, we would say, well, how does going back to District 2 compared to going to a district that maybe we haven't been to at all yet? So I think that we would be weighing those risks, and as part of that, we would be again contacting the state court administrator's office and perhaps even contacting the district and saying, so what has happened, what have you done, what have you implemented, what's going on. We also would be looking more across the board at what kinds of issues have come up. Perhaps something would be in the paper about certain risks or certain issues that had occurred at the district that again might elevate its risk. So we do consider various aspects of an entity's financial operations, including turnover of staff, to determine when we're going to go back and do a review.
Okay, Representative Mazzaro, no further questions? All right. Is there anyone else in the room that would like to be heard on this topic today? Please come forward, sir, and state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Tim Kinley, I'm me. If you want to put a title, judicial reform activist or family rights activist, whatever. I also do a cable show, Speechless, on judicial reform and family law and various other topics. And I did report on this when it came out, and I think this is a systematic mindset within our, especially the second judicial district, but within our court system altogether, that the rule of law is they don't have to follow the law. The appellate courts have ruled that judges don't have to follow the law. And our statutes say that judges don't have to follow their own rules.
And Mr. Kinley,
and so
we'd like to confine our testimony to the legislative
right,
audit report.
I just really am ecstatic that the legislature is doing their constitutional authority to oversee the judiciary in this manner. And I hope it continues. And This is a serious, and I appreciate the questions that have come out here, and that I hope it goes deeper and it gets delved in deeper, and I hope that there's an audit real quick, and that it doesn't wait, and that these things get tightened up, because it needs to happen, and that's been discussed here, is how soon. And as a citizen, our judiciary needs to be held accountable, and I think that would be one way that would help. The sooner the better.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Kinley. Seeing no further testimony or questions before the committee today, I want to thank the Office of the Legislative Auditor and the State Courts Administration and the Second Judicial District Administration for joining us today and walking us through the audit report and the resolution of problems identified. Our next committee meeting will be at the call of the chair. And seeing no further business, we are adjourned.